Good evening. It's good to see everybody here tonight. We do have several folks who are visiting with us, and we are very appreciative of your attendance with us tonight. We're engaged in a study this quarter at Jordan Park regarding the books of Joshua, Judges, Ruth, and the first part of the book of 1 Samuel. We are very happy to have those joining us by way of the live stream, and also those that I'm sure will watch the recorded part of this service as well. We appreciate you all being with us as well. For Sunday morning, for this coming Sunday morning, we will be looking at Judges chapter 3, verse 7, all the way through chapter 5, verse 31. So if you want to note that, Judges chapter 3, verse 7, through chapter 5, verse 31, we'll be looking at the first four judges, Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, and Deborah. And particularly for the kids, just like we have seen already, there's some exciting stuff that happens in these first four judges. There's some really interesting stuff that happens there. We learn about a king that suffers a pretty bad way of meeting his maker. And then we also learn about a very mean woman. Now, you may think your mom is a mean woman. You haven't seen a mean woman until we look in Judges chapter 3 on Sunday morning. There is a really mean woman in there. And so we'll look at her on Sunday morning. Some of you have asked, can we take a microphone and get it around to those who are asking questions and making comments? Well, that's kind of hard for us to do because of the various and sundry health concerns that people have, keeping the 6-foot distance. Only one person can have the mic. And I think our only track star, who is Gloria, is not here. And so, you know, she would be the one who would have to run around and try to... Well, that's right. The archers are runners. They could run around and do that. But if you will, when you have a question or a comment, be really loud. Most of you in this audience, I think, are Alabama fans. I don't think you have a problem being really loud. And so be really loud with your question. And if you do want to make a point, raise your hand. We can't see that. That just looks like you're waving. Yeah, so raise your hand so we can see you, and that way we'll be sure to call on you. And the study tonight, we're entering the book of Judges. Craig ended up with the book of Joshua on Sunday morning, and now we're entering the book of Judges, and I want to do a little bit of background work before we get started. You may remember in Joshua chapter 21, verses 43 through 45. Joshua 21, 43 through 45. The scripture says, "So the Lord gave Israel all the land which he had sworn to give to their fathers, and they possessed it and lived in it. And the Lord gave them rest on every side, according to all that he had sworn to their fathers. And no one of their enemies stood before them. The Lord gave all their enemies into their hand. Not one of the good promises which the Lord had made to the house of Israel failed. All came to pass." And so one of the things that I'm getting from this time around in this study is the importance of God's promises. Several of us that have taught thus far this quarter have talked about the promises that God made to Abraham and how that in this study we're seeing the unfolding of those. We're seeing the revealing of those. We're seeing those being done by God. He's made good on his promises. And so we're seeing a God... Promises made, promises kept. You don't have to doubt about it. There may be some friend of yours that makes a promise to you. Yeah, I'll come over Friday night. And then they don't come over. God, that doesn't happen with him. Because he makes a promise, he keeps his promise. And so we can count on that. We can count on that when everything else fails. The most important word in these three verses... Five times the word all is issued. The word all is said five times in these verses. There can be no doubt. Well, but I don't think he gave them all the land. No, he did. He gave them all the land. I'm not sure he fulfilled all the promises. No, he gave and fulfilled all his promises. Nothing that he promised did not come to pass. All the land was given to them. And so we can have no doubt about that. That is absolutely something that you can take to the bank. You don't have to worry about that. A little bit more background. In Deuteronomy chapter 20, verses 10 through 15, we find in that particular passage where it says that when Israel would come to a nation, they would offer to make peace with it. And if the nation was agreeable, fine. And if they were not agreeable, then they would go to war. But there was a qualifier to that. And that qualifier was for those nations that were very far off. Now, particularly kids, have we talked about any situation in the book of Joshua thus far where there was a nation that came to the Israelites and said, "We are from a far country"? Have we had that happen thus far in this term? Harrison? Yes, you're exactly right. Do you remember which nation it was? It's okay. I appreciate you answering. Anybody remember what nation was that, Ethan? Gibeon, right. You remember Brother Archer was a Gibeonite? And so where had you come from? Yeah, far, far away. Yeah, he came from a very far country. He didn't come from afar, he came from afar. I have to be sure to make that distinction, knowing the audience I'm talking to. So, but yeah, they were to offer peace to them. But right after that, in verses 16 through 18, God said, utterly destroy the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. When we go back to Deuteronomy 7, verse 1, we find that the Girgashites are also added to that list. Seven nations that are greater and stronger than what Israel was. And so God tells them, if it's a way, way far off nation, you better do your due diligence, make sure they are, because I'm holding you accountable for those that are among this group of seven. You got to make sure that you utterly destroy them. And the reason for that was because God said, I want you to drive them out. Do not associate with those nations. When you associate with those nations, you will pick up their practices. You will intermarry with them, your sons with their daughters with your sons, and back and forth. All of this will take place if you don't drive them out. So God was extremely clear about that. In Joshua 23, verse 13, Joshua 23, verse 13. I want to look at a couple of verses prior to that, though. Let me back up just a little bit. In verse 6, you heard Lane mention this in his prayer. Joshua 23, verse 6. Be very firm, then, to keep and do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, so that you may not turn aside from it to the right hand or to the left. God said, don't turn to the right, don't turn to the left. You do all that's in the word that I have told you to do. Cling to the word to your God. In verse 7, he says, don't associate with them, these nations that remain among you, or mention the name of their gods. Don't make anyone swear by them. Serve them. Bow down to them. Verse 9, for the Lord has driven out great and strong nations from before you. And as for you, no man has stood before you this day. One of your men puts flight to 1,000. For the Lord, your God, is he who fights for you, just as he promised you. God fought for them. God fought for the nation of Israel to drive the nations out. But due to their lack of faith, they didn't drive them all out. So in verse 11, he says, take diligent heed to yourselves to love the Lord your God. You all have had heard me say this on numerous occasions. This is another one of those examples where the beautiful things of love, grace, mercy, the emotions, the heart are absolutely superglued to obedience, to the word, to the law, to keeping commandments. Absolutely superglued. People want to separate them. God didn't separate them. They are absolutely superglued. And this is one of those instances where you find that to be the case. Verse 12, God says, if you ever go back and cling to the rest of these nations, these which remain among you and intermarry with them so that you associate with them and they with you, know with certainty that the Lord your God will not continue to drive these nations out from before you, but they will be a snare and a trap to you. And they will be a whip on your sides and thorns in your eyes until you perish from off this good land which the Lord your God has given to you. God gave them the land, but it was always conditional. It was always conditional. A little bit more background. We looked Sunday morning where the people said, we will serve the Lord our God. We will serve the Lord. Joshua said, as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. And so all the people said the same thing. And he said, all right, let that be a witness to you. But interestingly, in verse 23, Joshua 24, 23, Joshua says, now therefore put away the foreign gods which are in your midst and incline your hearts to the Lord, the God of Israel. Here's a bunch of people who just said, yes, we're going to do what God says. And then Joshua says, oh, by the way, y'all remember all those foreign gods that you got in your house? You got to get rid of them. That's really strange, isn't it? That's strange that he would have to say that to these people. They should have already gotten rid of those. This is the people that came through the wilderness, whose parents had died off in the wilderness. And now Joshua's having to tell them to get rid of their foreign idols. Does anybody remember one of the very first times that we see in the scriptures a descendant of Abraham who had false gods? Anybody remember a situation among the descendants of Abraham where there was a false god? This isn't the first, by the way. If you take a look in Genesis chapter 31, Rachel, Jacob's wife, had stolen the household idols from her father, Laban. This business about false gods had been going on for a long time. And Joshua says, that's it. No more. You got to get rid of those false gods. You cannot do that anymore. You're going to pledge allegiance to the one true God. You got to make sure that you walk the talk. Make sure that you do exactly what you said. And so the people said, that's what we will do. And so we have here, I think, a high point, a great high point for the people of Israel. I'm not sure they ever met that same high point of faithfulness the rest of the time that they were a nation. I'm not sure they ever did that. Judges chapter 1. There are still foreign nations living on the land. They've taken the land. We'll show you a map in just a little bit. The Israelites have taken the land, but there are foreign nations still living among them in the land. And so Judah and Simeon in chapter 1 say, listen, let's go up and fight against the Canaanites. And so they go up to fight against the Canaanites, and there's one particular guy that they meet up with, and his name is Adoni Bezek. You may remember that this land really was worth fighting for. God had said it was a land flowing with milk and honey. That was the best I could do. That's a big milk jug with a small thing of honey. It was overflowing with milk and honey. So it was a land that they really should have wanted to take possession of and to drive those nations out of. So here they meet up with this guy named Adoni Bezek. And I had asked the kids, who was Adoni Bezek and what happened to him? Who was he and what happened to him? Among the kids, who was Adoni Bezek? Ethan? Okay. he was the king of this area called Bezek. And so when the Israelites, particularly Judah and Simeon, caught him, they chopped off his thumbs, his big toes. Boy, that just sounds awful, doesn't it? And you see the picture of him up there. Now, I don't know if you all knew this, but Adoni Bezek was the quarterback and the place kicker for the Bezek Bears. I don't know that that was in a commentary. I don't know if you've ever seen that. But have you ever tried to throw a football without your thumb? I mean, I have small hands anyway. I can't even imagine trying to throw a football without my thumb. And can you imagine kicking it? I would ask Stephen to stand in here and hold it, but I think he would pull it out just about the time I got up to it. But can you imagine kicking a football without your big toe? So I think that's really the reason that they chopped off his thumbs and his big toes. What do y'all think? No? Okay. What? Okay, kids, why is that? Why did they chop off his thumbs and his big toes? Audrey? Yeah, he couldn't walk or grab anything, is what Audrey said. Very hard to do that if you don't have your thumbs or your big toes. Really makes it difficult. If you're going to go to war against somebody and you want to chuck a spear at them, you have to have a thumb. That just doesn't work very well. And if you want to chase after them, your big toe really comes in handy. So I think that's one of the key reasons, is to eliminate his power. Another reason, any other reason why they did that? Marla? Well, you still are, I think. Yeah. Have you ever heard the saying, you're going to get what's coming to you? Adoni Bezek got what was coming to him. He had done that to 70 kings. I wonder, did he make a little trophy case and put each one of, I don't know what he did. 70 kings, big toes and thumbs, he chopped off. And so he got what was coming to him. And as he says in verse 7, as I have done, so God has repaid me. There is a time of reckoning. It does come to pass. Brother Mark. Yes, big toes are what makes you balance. They really help you to keep your balance. So very important to have that. And then we talked about how many kings gathered scraps of food under his table. Can you imagine being a king and then having your toes and thumbs cut off, and you've got to get under the table of Adoni Bezek with your four fingers on each hand in order to just get scraps of food? How humiliating, how awful that is. So that's exactly what happened with him. He had really messed up. In chapter 1, verse 8, Judah fought against Jerusalem and took it. Then Judah and Simeon could not drive out, however, the people of the valley. When you come on down in the chapter 1, they tried to drive those people out, but they could not drive out the people of the valley in chapter 1, verse 19. Benjamin tried to drive out the Jebusites in Jerusalem, and they could not drive them out. And then interestingly also, in chapter 1, verse 22, it says, likewise the house of Joseph went up against Bethel, and the Lord was with them, and Joseph spied out Bethel. And the spies saw a man coming out of the city and said to him, please show us the entrance to the city, and we will treat you kindly. Does this sound familiar? Had the Israelites used this same process before in our study this quarter? Anybody can answer that one. Sound familiar? You got a 50-50 chance. It's either yes or no. Yes. Okay. Anybody want to elaborate? What does it sound familiar like? Okay, sounds like Rahab, right, with Jericho, exactly. So they've learned, they figured out, this is the way we need to do things. So he shows them the gate to the city, they go in, they struck the city, and then they let the man and his family go free. Then we come on down in chapter 1, And let me back up. I want to go to one other thing here. This expression, house of Joseph. House of Joseph, pretty interesting. Distinction between Judah and the sons of Joseph seems to start being made around this time. When you go back to Joshua 18, verse 5, you'll find it says, "And they shall divide it into seven portions. Judah shall stay in its territory on the south, and the house of Joseph shall stay in their territory on the north." In chapter 18, verse 11, "The lot of the tribe of the sons of Benjamin came up according to their families. Territory of their lot lay between the sons of Joseph, Judah, and the sons of Joseph." And then in Judges chapter 1, verse 22 that we just looked at, this house of Joseph is mentioned. There are other references that are made in the scriptures that indicate that there was a split coming long before the kingdom actually divided, as recorded in 1 Kings chapter 12. I think what we're seeing here in Judges chapter 1 is the beginning of some of that division. You'll notice over here on the map, you'll see the kingdom of Judah down here at the bottom, and then the kingdom of Israel. But notice that you have Ephraim and Manasseh. They were the two sons of Joseph. And so you find the distinction being made there. Brian?
People are mad to hold grudges. Families will hold grudges. This started back when Joseph was alive. He was sold into slavery by his brothers.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is they never really forgot that.
Yeah. Yeah, that could very well be. The source of this, or maybe the starting of this, was when the brother sold Joseph into slavery, is what Brian said. That could well be the case. You also look in the book of 1 Samuel, and you start to see references of Israel versus Judah before they really were the divided kingdom, before they were two separate nations. So I think that's pretty significant to notice. This is a picture that shows the tribes and nations that they did not drive out. One point that I want to make is you'll notice down here Simeon. Simeon is within the whole land of Judah. And there's some thought that Simeon may well have just eventually assimilated in with the tribe of Judah. You don't see a whole lot about them in the rest of the scriptures, but because of where they are, they somewhat get melded in with those who are from Judah. And so you find here a situation where they become part of the nation that eventually becomes known as Judah. But Judah could not drive out the people of the valley, neither could Simeon. You remember we just talked about that. We just went through that they tried to drive out the people of the valley, and they could not. Benjamin could not drive out the Jebusites. Jebus was the city that eventually became known as Jerusalem. Part of it was in Judah, part of it was in Benjamin. And Benjamin couldn't drive out his part of the Jebusites. Manasseh, that is the half-tribe on the west, Ephraim, Zebulun, Asher, Naphtali, couldn't drive out the Canaanites. And then towards the end of Judges chapter 1, you found that the Amorites imposed their will on Dan. It wasn't like Dan tried to drive out the Amorites. The Amorites said, not going to have it. Y'all are going to live up here in the hill country. We've got the valley. And the Amorites took charge of that situation. And so these are some of the nations that would be around about them that would cause them problems for many years. Can you imagine what it would be like if you went home tonight? You went home tonight and there were people living in your backyard. You thought this was your land. You thought this is where you lived. Can you imagine what it would be like to go home and find people living on your land? You would just really be upset about that. And so that's the picture that I get with what happened with Israel. Now, I don't know for sure, but I rather think that maybe they looked a little bit like these folks. Those are hillbillies. Wait a minute, those are some of my people. I'm hillbillies. But you can imagine, here are the hillbillies, and you come home and they've got their guns and everything, and these are people who are living in your land, and you've got to contend with them because you didn't have the faith to drive them out. Maybe they actually looked a little bit more like this. Maybe they were more warlike than the Beverly Hillbillies are. So let me ask those that are in junior high and high school. This was one of the questions that we sent out. Because Israel did not drive out all of the nations from their land, what purpose did those nations serve for God? They didn't drive them out, but they served a purpose for God. What do the scriptures tell us are some of the purposes that were served for that? Junior high and high school? Or Jansen? No. Junior high and high school? Are y'all going to make me do that? How about the adults? Let me open it up to the adults. What were some of the reasons that were given for God's purposes that he could use these for? Roselle? They were a temptation. Yes, they were very definitely a temptation. When you look at chapter 3, verse 4, they were for testing Israel. Let me mention this just real quickly. God today does test us. He doesn't tempt us. Big difference. God's not trying to draw us off. God has provided with every temptation a way of escape, 1 Corinthians 10:13. So he has provided that way for us to escape. We are tested, but not beyond what we can possibly bear. There is a test. And so God left them there for testing. Another reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so quite possibly one of the reasons that they were left there was so that the people could decide, am I going to lean on God or am I going to lean on my own understanding? Okay. Brian? Punish. Yes. Yes. Ashley? What he said? Okay. Daniel?
I don't really know what this means, but chapter 3, verse 2 says that they were there to help the children of Israel know war. Because if future generations might not know war if they weren't there.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what that means, but what it says.
Yeah, Daniel says in chapter 3, verse 2, only in order that the generations of the sons of Israel might be taught war, those who had not experienced it formerly. So they were left there to maybe provide readiness to defend. Maybe that's a way to say it. Ashley? Right, right. It was there so that they would be reminded who God was. There was always the possibility that they were going to forget who God was. So, we find in chapter 2 a cycle of unfaithfulness. Chapter 2 is a rehearsal of what we're going to see throughout the entire rest of the book of Judges. It is God telling the people of Israel, this is what's going to happen. This is what you're going to do. I'm going to tell you what you're going to do before you do it. And so he makes sure that they understand that. And in order to help illustrate this cycle of unfaithfulness, I've asked some of our young people to help us out. Landon and Audrey, would you all come on down? Landon is going to represent the tribes of Israel that are on the west side of the Jordan River. And Audrey's going to represent the tribes of Israel who are on the east side of the Jordan River. And you may recall, of course, in the scriptures occasionally that it will say that those who are beyond the Jordan, well, beyond depends on which direction you're looking at, but normally when it says beyond the Jordan, they mean on the east side. Now, who remembers what two tribes, maybe two and a half tribes, what tribes are on the east side? Manasseh, the half tribe of Manasseh. Gad, yeah, and? Reuben. Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh were on that east side over there. And so what would happen, as you read in chapter 2, is that the people, as I said earlier, started out at a high point. They were faithful. They were committed. They were all in. They were absolutely going to do whatever God said. And so if you were to ask the people, are you going to do what God says? Really? They said they're going to obey God. There's no doubt about it. Here we have the side from the west and the side from the east. They're going to obey God. Okay. But in time, you remember those nations? You remember they had false gods? Well, sometimes they would get tempted and drawn away. And they would disobey. And so there might be a false god like we see over here that they would fall down and worship. And that would, of course, mean that they disobeyed God and no longer loved Him. And then God would send oppression. He would oppress the people for their disobedience. And in order to help illustrate that, we have King Ethan of the Barnesians. And King Ethan is going to come up, and he's going to oppress the children of Israel. And I don't know if you all who are operating the camera can get a close in on this, but King Ethan, show them how you're going to oppress them. Yeah, show the rest of the audience. He's a mean king. This is the kind of guy that I think would cut your thumbs and big toes off. But he would oppress the children of Israel, and the children would take that for a period of time, but then eventually they would cry out. Okay, they asked for help. And God, being rich in mercy, rich in compassion, then would hear them. He would hear their cry. And then He would send them a deliverer. We're in the book of Judges. This could easily be called the book of the deliverers. And so He's going to send them a deliverer. And tonight we have Judge Jonathan. And Judge Jonathan is going to come up, and he's going to rescue them from the mean King Ethan of the Barnesians. He's gone. He's out of here. And so the Israelites were victorious because God sent a deliverer, one who was faithful to Him. And as a result then, the people turn back to faithfulness. They make sure that they are doing what God says. But in time, the judge dies. And the people turn back to disobedience. And the cycle starts all over again. Thank you all. Appreciate it. But that's an illustration of this cycle that we're going to see throughout the rest of the book. That's what we're going to see throughout the rest of the book. So, those of you who are older, what happened to the generation after the generation of Joshua? What happened to that generation after that very faithful generation during Joshua's days? They didn't know God. They did not have that close personal relationship with God. It meant nothing to them. And so they didn't know God anymore. Any other answers on that? Didn't know what He had done. Didn't remember about all those great acts that He had done. Okay? Lane? Yes. Deuteronomy chapter 6. You keep on telling them. You teach them when you rise up. You teach them when you go to bed. You keep teaching them. They have to know that God is who He says He is. Okay? Any other answers? They intermarried. Yeah, they didn't. When they intermarried with the nations round about them, they didn't stay faithful very long. That's exactly right. And so, over and over again it says, Joshua chapter 2, verse 7, they'd served the Lord all the days of Joshua. Joshua lived 110 years. And they had seen all the great work of the Lord that He had done for them. In verse 10, all that generation were gathered to their fathers, and there arose a generation after them who did not know the Lord, nor yet the work that He had done for Israel. And then in verse 17, they didn't listen to their judges. They played the harlot after gods and bowed down before them. They did not walk in the ways that their fathers had walked in obeying the commandments of the Lord. Roselle? Yes. Kids, listen to one of the farmers. You're one generation away. You have to continue to be faithful. That's extremely important. You've got to be faithful to the Lord. Daniel? Mm-hmm. Do y'all remember when Panasonic products were popular? You remember that? And their tagline was Panasonic, slightly ahead of its time. That was Daniel. He just previewed what we're going to talk about Sunday morning, and that is this fact about the generation. There is at least a generation or so for this cycle to complete, and we'll look at that Sunday morning. In just a minute, Stephen's going to lead us in an invitation song. And I appreciate your study. Appreciate your diligence in this study tonight. I did want to mention one other thing. Gloria, who we all know and love, sent in an answer to the question. Even though she can't be here, she studies the scriptures. She was prepared. She sent in an answer. And it's just an absolutely beautiful answer. And I won't take the opportunity to read all of it. But she says, the lesson to be taught here is, we are all responsible for our own souls. And even though Israel had lost a great leader, there was no excuse to follow other gods. Especially when they knew better. And they had seen firsthand how God had provided and blessed them as long as they followed Him. Once they stopped following God, their lives began to unravel. And their hearts become hard to their own sinfulness. The times we're living in now are no different. This world is dealing with a virus that has caused us to social distance, some to be confined to their homes, live streaming church services, and etc. These are times where our faith can be challenged and questioned within ourselves. But we are blessed to have the Word of God to study and meditate on daily to prepare us for times like this. And we must know and believe that God is going to take care of us. We can't take matters into our own hands. We have to rely on what God says. And so, I want to issue that as a part of the invitation tonight. It may be that you're here with us tonight. Maybe you're on the live streaming, or maybe you're watching the recording. And you're thinking, that looks a lot like my life. It's spinning out of control. I keep trying and going in circles, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. What I'm doing certainly is not working. I'm following my own way. That just doesn't work. I don't want to follow my own way anymore. God has a better way. I want to follow God's way. Tonight, you can make that choice. Tonight, you have the opportunity to respond to the invitation of Jesus Christ. It's not our invitation. It's Christ's invitation. And His invitation is to come forward, to believe, knowing that without faith it's impossible to please God, knowing that your belief then requires repentance, requires a change of life. And it then begins on the first day and every day of your life as a life of confession that He is the Christ, and then being baptized into Jesus Christ for the remission of sins, then going on to live a life that is faithful and doesn't keep repeating this cycle. If you want to respond to the Lord's invitation, please come forward as we stand and sing.